This podcast is brought to you in part by Sovereign Sportsman Solutions. As conservation officers, we know just how important technology is in this day and age. S3 is a cutting-edge and trusted vendor that provides state agencies with licensing, mobile, CRM, marketing, law enforcement, and event management solutions all in one place. They are dedicated to benefiting the resource, so check out the link in the show notes to sign up for their newsletter and get the industry insights, news, and content that can keep you up to date on the tech that helps drive conservation into the future. A Game Warden's children's book, titled A Cowboy in the Woods, is a story of Bobby, a boy who spends the whole summer observing wildlife, writing notes in his notebook, fishing with his dad, and keeping track of all the animals in his neighborhood. While trying to solve a neighborhood mystery, what he discovers is more than just an appreciation for the natural world. The idea for this book came from Wayne Saunders' own childhood experiences, growing up and exploring the woods and streams and lakes and ponds of his native New Hampshire. The love of nature instilled in his childhood led him to a career as a conservation officer. Wayne Saunders is a retired lieutenant conservation officer from the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. Lindsay Webb is a naturalist, wildlife biologist, and environmental educator. Together, they collaborated with wildlife artist Ashley Mayers to produce The Cowboy in the Woods, the story of a boy whose love of nature leads him in unexpected directions. Available at wardenswatch.com and Amazon. Warden's Watch Podcast is now on Patreon, combining the Thin Green Line Podcast and the Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon to bring member-exclusive extra content, both video, audio, and with product deals as well. Become a member to support our podcast and get something extra. Search Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon.
We love our children. We protect them. We guide them. We prepare them for life in the world. With all that we do, from deep in our hearts, we cannot control all things. Life-threatening illnesses and disabilities affect far too many of our children each year. While we cannot change the circumstance, we can make dreams come true. Dreams to provide hope, to provide spiritual healing and strength, to provide moments of happiness and relief in the hardest of times. We can give a glimmer of light and hope in a time of darkness and despair. Join huntofalifetime.org to help make dreams come true, to provide hope for children with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Hunt of a Lifetime is a nonprofit organization fulfilling dreams for hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Visit huntofalifetime.org to learn how you can make a difference.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch. Episode 72 of Warden's Watch. Benny Richards, Texas Game Warden. And this is kind of by request. I had a couple of requests for this, which, that's pretty cool that we can actually put it together for a request, John, when listeners of Warden's Watch say, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And a lot of them don't understand. We got a lot of these things canned, like 6 months out or even longer. At some point, we were a year with podcasts already canned. So we slide some in, here and there, and we try to mix it up according to what our listeners want. And Benny Richards was requested, and Benny Richards is now an author, Tales of a Texas Game Warden, What My Eyes Have Seen, which is pretty engaging and probably a good Christmas gift coming up on Christmas. We're going to release this before Christmas. Besides A Cowboy in the Woods and Hidden War, John. We'll put Tales of a Texas Game Warden on there as far as one of those books that maybe Game Warden supporters or other Game Wardens will certainly want to purchase for their friends of like minds and conservation supporters all across the world. So, and we talk about him being on Lone Star Law, very similar to our experiences, John, with Wild Justice and Northwoods Law. He was an engaging person on that show, and he was an engaging interview. Pretty cool to be able to reach out finally to Texas. I don't want to forget about Joss Hurst, who we did a memorial. He was our first Texas Game Warden. Yeah. Benny's actually our second. That's why I hesitated. I almost said our first Texas Game Warden, but Josh Hurst was certainly our first Texas Game Warden on the podcast.
Yeah, no, and spot on, Wayne. Benny, man, what a great career, you know, working in Texas. And the thing that's so cool about having Benny on is he's done the Lone Star Law thing. He's been part of a big TV outreach and education thing, like you with Northwoods Law and me with Wild Justice. But the other thing about that's cool about Benny is the diversity of his state where he works. You know, Texas is one of the most progressive, well-funded, highly trained and diversified on specialized teams for all the crazy issues they have down there. And, you know, it's near and dear to my heart with the border issue and all the conservation things and the cartel smugglers they're getting into that we're dealing with internally. So great to have Benny on and great to see that he's got a book, man. I'm going to gobble this thing up and I can't wait to read it. And you guys are really going to enjoy getting a taste of Texas through the eyes of a guy that had a heck of a career and can speak really well about it. So great to have this brother from the Thin Green Line on, and a great episode.
Yeah, and we're going to do a virtual book signing December 2nd as well on our Patreon site. So if you guys are interested in getting your book signed live and in person, what we'll do is going to sign the book and then we'll ship it off to you next day. If you want it personalized, my co-author Lindsay Webb is going to be on there for A Cowboy in the Woods. John's going to be on there. So it's going to be a really good time on Patreon to sign these books, have some interaction with us, and get them out for Christmas. So that's the point. And I'm looking forward to that. Certainly, you know, another book that you should have on your list is Tales of a Texas Game Warden, episode 72, Game Warden Benny Richards from Texas. Some of you guys may remember him from Lone Star Law. And certainly want to talk about that. And Benny also has a book out. So we're going to talk about that. So a lot of exciting things. Benny's recently retired. Got a lot to talk about that. And I think he kind of went down the same path I did because that book fired right off. And I think that's going to be pretty exciting when books fire off. I just had one released 2 weeks ago, Benny. And I kind of did a different spin on a Game Warden book. I did a children's book, something to inspire the youth of tomorrow and future Game Wardens, to be honest with you, to try to inspire them to do what we did and have as much fun as we did.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say that because I've got a children's book, too. I just haven't released it.
So, oh, really?
yeah, we're walking down the same trail.
Absolutely. No, that's really cool. So we had the same thought process. So, but the book you just released is pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. Have you read it yet?
I have not. And I should have before this because generally when there's a new author.
Here's a picture of it.
Yeah.
There's the cover.
So
yeah, it's the title of it is Tales of a Texas Game Warden.
Nice.
And it's just a collection of 28 stories. There's really nothing special about them. It's just 28 stories that stuck out of my head when I started putting ink on paper. And so far, the feedback's been really positive. It's not a really long book, and that's by design. I didn't want to bore anybody to death. I just, like I said, I put 28 stories out there I thought would be interesting. And so far, everybody said they've enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, and I like that idea. Just quick. And the stories we have to tell are pretty cool, and they are pretty quick when you condense them. But can you share one of the stories? Give us a little teaser for the book.
The book starts out. The very first story in the book is actually a very serious story about when my partner Chris Freed was shot, and everything, how we responded to the call, and how we found him and got him to the hospital, and how he survived, and you know, he made it through it. He's back on duty, but it's just a story from the time I got the call till the time that we got him in surgery in Dallas. And so it's a pretty intense story. The book is not that intense throughout, but I just wanted to start off with that story because in my career, that was one of the stories that really affected me the most.
Mm, No, that's a good spot to start, Benny, for sure. John Norris and I talk about, I was shot in the line of duty. He was involved in a shooting incident with his partner, was shot in the line of duty. So, you know, we certainly take those serious. And as much fun as I think the job was, it becomes very serious at certain times. And we always deal with people that have guns, knives, and it's learning how to read those types of people in certain situations. But, yeah, there's... Yeah. Nothing like the adrenaline of those days when someone's shot in the line of duty and you're responding. That's a great way to start a book. And thank goodness he survived, because that's a story you want to tell. It's tough. I lost friends. Yeah.
It was a close call. It was a close call.
Yeah. And this helps tell people how serious it is, because they do see the sides on our reality TV shows. They see the fun. They see the... They don't always see the intensity, but sometimes they do. So certainly those cameras are there and responding to every accident, you know, that we have. I know we had a couple where Glenn Lucas was hit with a 10-wheeler with a camera guy sitting right beside him. And we had another guy hit by a side-by-side ATV about 60 miles an hour with the film crew, and capturing all that serious stuff that we deal with day in and day out. I mean, I remember when Northwoods Law first came on, I was on the first episode in New Hampshire over a drowning, and I had a lot of calls asking if it was fake, you know, kind of crazy that it was fake, and I couldn't believe people thought that stuff was fake. Did you have similar experiences?
I did. Actually, you know, Lone Star Law and all, it was really geared to be a family show, the Animal Planet and all that, and a lot of things they filmed with me ended up on the edit room floor because they were too intense for that show. I mean, actually, they actually were riding with a game warden and his wife, who was also a game warden, and they were involved in an officer-involved shooting where someone was shot and killed. But obviously, that's not going to be on a family show.
And, right.
Some of the things that we filmed, we knew that it was never going to make it to airtime because of the intensity of it. And people asked me the same thing. They said, is any of that, those lines fed to you? Is it rehearsed? And I go, no, it's what you see is what it is. And I told the film crew early on when they got in the truck with me, I said, I'm not changing anything. I said, I'm going to be who I am, do what I do, because anything else wouldn't be real. So I told them, I'm just going to be who I am, do what I do, and hang on for the ride. And it was a ride. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was overall was fun. I to start with, I think it was different. It was new. I'm glad I got to experience it in my tenure. I think the guys, but it's a lot of extra work that I don't think people say. Like you said, it ended up on the cutting room floor for those 15-minute scenes were hours and hours of filming. And I guess
people always used to ask me. Also, everybody was curious, like, how much do you get paid to do that? And when I tell them, I said, no, you don't understand. We don't get paid a dime. It's just we're on duty, and they're just kind of, you know, shadowing us and following along. We don't get any compensation for it. And that kind of took some people by surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, you asked me about the book and stories in the book. There's one chapter in the book that talks about how I became involved with Lone Star Law. And I'm going to cheat a little bit and give away some of my book. But the way that all started for me was I was riding along minding my own business one day, and my phone rang. And well, actually, it was a text. And they were talking about this new show called Lone Star Law, and they wanted volunteers to ride along with game wardens. And I thought it was a silly idea. So I deleted the text and just went on about my day. And about a week later, my captain called me back and said, hey, you know that text I sent out about Lone Star Law, that new show? And I go, yeah, I thought it was silly. And I deleted it. And he goes, I knew you did. He said, I want you to reconsider, because it's going to be on nationwide TV, national TV. And we want some senior game wardens with some experience to represent our part of the state. He said, I really want you. And after a little bit of salesmanship, he convinced me to do it. And I went to the organizational meeting where we the producers and cameramen introduced themselves to us and us to them. And a week later, they were in my truck, and the rest was history. But I shunned it at first, but I'm glad I changed my mind, because as you know, I made a lot of friends, had a lot of unique experiences, and it was really a good experience. I'm glad I did change my mind.
Yeah, and when we had a previous discussion about Ben Shanks, one of the producers there, and, you know, I had Ben yell at me, if you can believe that. He yelled at me and chewed me out.
So you too.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen Ben's temper also. Yeah,
It was just learning what they wanted. I was going, like you said, about what I do, about what I normally was doing, and I assigned a team to go out for searching for a guy that was out looking for antlers and had gotten lost. And you know, he sees a team of wardens walking away. He's like, "What are they doing?" I said, "Yeah, I assigned them to do this." This, he goes, "I need to know that. I need to know that, so I can."
I can hear him saying that. I can hear him saying that right now.
Oh, man. So I called those guys back, and we got a film crew with them, and we sent them all out together. And I learned from that point on to keep Ben in the loop of what was going on and how to do it. And so it was pretty good. But I did make him take all the main stickers. They had, you know, say started in Maine. They had main stickers all over their cameras. I'm like, peel those things off, man. We're going to do a fresh start here.
Yeah.
Nothing against my brothers in Maine and sisters. They did an awesome job of blazing the trail. It was kind of funny to go back and forth, as you know, to get that relationship with those guys and have fun with them as well, because they shared your experiences while they were in the truck with you and why they're following you. And you know, you get used to it. It's kind of weird that you get used to it. No one else does, because as you're doing your job, but you get used to it. So you had a similar experience with Ben, huh?
Yeah, I. Well, there's a slang term that I won't use, but I got into a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, if you follow me. And he would, at first, the first couple of seasons, they, you know, he knew me and I knew him. We kind of had a friendship going there. But they would leave to go to another part of the state. And then when we would do some catch up next time I see him, he said, "What have you been doing?" I told him about these things I was getting into. It. His eyes bugged out. I said, "Why didn't you call me?"
Yes.
And I go, "Why didn't?" He said, and he gave me his card and he says, and he was mad. He said, "I need to know these things." And he said, when something like that's going on and you know beforehand, I need to know. And so, I've heard exactly those words come out of his mouth.
Great, great, great. And he had practiced chewing people out for sure.
But he's a good guy. And he's a good friend. And I stay in contact with him a lot now.
That's good. Yeah, and he's living in Texas, to my knowledge. He had bought a place when he was up here. And
he's got a real nice, down in the hill country of Texas, a little town called Llano. Yeah. And that's a real, it's pretty down there.
Yeah. No, he was excited to get down there and move down there and excited to work with you guys. So, and now, Benny, from what I understand, and I'm seeing that Lone Star Law isn't going to be on anymore. Is that true?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Right now, everybody's all up and excited about a new law that just passed our legislative session.
That's what I'm hearing.
Bars police agencies in Texas from contracting with these live police shows. Mm-hmm. But that law specifically, as I understand it, that law specifically exempted Texas game wardens.
Wow. So, excellent. Good news.
For a reason. Yeah. So it exempted us. But I also hear that they're in the final year of their contract with our agency. Mm-hmm. So it was it was coming to an end anyway.
Right.
But that law is not the reason why it won't be on air anymore. It's just they simply been here for, I don't know, 5-6 years now, and I guess everything changes and they're moving on.
Right.
So I know that they're working on a new season right now. So you'll get to see some more Lone Star Law.
Nice. Nice. No, that's good news for sure. And thanks for clarifying that, because everything I had read, it sounded like it was the end by legislation. But I hadn't heard that yet. So it's good to hear it from you that it was exempt, because it's such we do so much education as game wardens as well as law enforcement, whether it's hunter education, whether it's outdoor education. It's part of what we do. And I think these TV shows blended extremely well with letting the public, because, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, everybody knew what a game warden was and what they did. And we've kind of moved away from that. So I think we're reintroducing the world to what we do. And I'd like to keep them up to date on what's going on, because we are definitely changing as we charge on into the future.
As far as Texas game wardens go, what I find is a lot of people thought they knew what a Texas game warden did. And some of them had a pretty good idea, but they didn't know. I mean, in Texas, we're, you know, peace officers also. And so we enforce all types of laws and make a lot of arrests and different citations outside of conservation law enforcement.
Right.
And that opened a lot of people's eyes. I meet people and they say, "Wow, until I saw that show, I had no idea that, you know, game wardens did what y'all do." Mm. And so that was a good way of educating the people here, at least in Texas, as to what the Texas game wardens, our responsibilities really are.
Mm. So you've been on TV, you've written a book. How'd this all start, Benny? I mean, can we go back to when Benny Richards wanted to be a game warden?
I will tell you, the first time, I shouldn't tell this, but I'm going to tell it. The first time I ever saw a game warden in my life, I was sitting on the bridge rail of a highway where there was a river running underneath the highway, and I was sitting on the guardrail. And I had a 22 rifle, and I was shooting snakes and frogs and rocks and whatever below me. And I lived in a very, very rural area. I mean, this is one of those bridges where, you know, two or three cars a day come by. So I wasn't worried about it. And all of a sudden, I heard a car, didn't even pay any attention. Well, the car stopped on the bridge right beside me. And as I turned and looked, I saw the great big seal of Texas on the side of the door. And the window slowly rolled down. And this big, burly gentleman in a uniform introduced himself as a game warden and asked me what I was doing. And I was kind of talking. And I said, well, I was shooting rocks or whatever down here. He said, boy, don't be shooting that gun off this road anymore. And he just rolled the window up and drove on. And I left immediately. But that made a huge impact on me. I was really impressed by that guy. He never even got out of the car, but I never shot a gun off the road again. Mm-hmm. Because that first encounter with a game warden left an impression on me. And that's kind of my first interaction with a game warden. And growing up, I mean, I lived in a rural area on a little farm, and that's what I did. I hunted and fished. My eyes were open. I was daydreaming about hunting and fishing somewhere. I mean, and when I got into school, high school, I would show up with hip waders on that I would take off and throw in the back of my truck, slip my tennis shoes on, and run into the high school 5 minutes late about every other day because I'd been out, you know, duck hunting that morning or something. That was just a lifestyle for me. I really love the outdoors. And as I got older, I got into college. At first, I thought about becoming a coach and going in the teaching field. Mm-hmm. But I had some other friends that did that, and it seemed like they were always moving, and I wanted something a little more stable. I never left my, you know, my enthusiasm for the outdoors and hunting. And anyway, I ended up being a police officer in Richardson, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I did that for about 3 years. And while I was a police officer, I started trying to get into the Game Warden Academy. And my first attempt was unsuccessful. And I had to wait. And at the time, they were only taking classes about every 2.5 or 3 years. So I had to wait almost 3 years, applied again, got accepted the second time, and the rest is history. They gave me a gun and a badge and a truck and sent me to a little bitty county in Texas called Delta County. It was really close to my home anyway, so I knew my way around. And I hit the ground running and never looked back. And it was a very, very exciting career.
Yeah, no doubt. Can you think of one of those cases, the one on your early years that stand out in your mind? I mean, some of the best cases I made was probably tripping it over in my first 3 years and, you know, accidentally jumping into things. And my lieutenant would always try to guide me, but I'd always go on a different trail and I'd do things differently than he did. And I'd catch people that he didn't catch. And I found that as a lieutenant, the same thing with younger guys, just they'd always ask me what to do. And I'd say, I don't want to tell you what to do. I want you to find your own way. Cause you're going to look at a poacher differently and you might catch him cause I didn't. So, and I found that's pretty interesting to watch. You know, along the way I guide them a little if they were getting off the trail too bad, but just a fresh view. I love those younger years.
There was when I was a rookie game warden, there is one, and actually it's a very long story. I can give you the short version, but it happened over, you know, all through the night. But I'd gotten a call early in the afternoon from a gentleman who said that he watched a guy shoot a deer off the road in his pasture near his house. And they had some kind of a confrontation, but the culprit had left the scene. Okay, but he got his license plate number. So later on, this was the opening day of the deer season. And so later on, when things slowed down, and I could have just waited until in the morning and went and looked for the guy, but I didn't. I left the sheriff's office with my partner in tow, and it was about midnight, and we were going to another city about 20 miles away to run this guy down and interview him about, you know, his part in shooting this deer. So it's about midnight, and here again, it's kind of a confusing story, but I ended up making a traffic stop on a little car on the interstate en route to this other town. When I stopped this car, I didn't realize it, but it was a taxi cab, and it had left Dallas, Texas, and it was en route to Texarkana. And if you you know anything about that part of the state, you're looking at over 200 miles. Not many people take taxi cab rides, you know, 200 miles. So I knew, I said something was up, and I still had that police mentality because I'd been a police officer 3 years just prior to this. And so I got the driver out, and we, after a little short discussion, I opened the trunk. And after looking in the trunk, I got suspicious. I called a K-9 unit to the scene, and we found about $250,000 worth of cocaine hidden in the trunk of this taxi cab. So that right there was a pretty good lick. And so we impounded the car and arrested the passenger and took him to jail, did all the paperwork. And that would have been a good night if we'd have just, you know, dusted off our hands and went to the house, but we didn't. We got through to the jail about 1:30 or 2 in the morning, and we went to the poacher's house, and we got him out of bed. And before we left his house, we had seized 5 deer that he had killed. So, yeah, when we got home, the sun was coming up, and we had a lot of evidence and a lot of reports to do, but it was a very eventful night for 2 rookie game wardens.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I love that. I love that first 24 to do those interviews at midnight and getting them out of bed. And when I was a trainee, it was so funny. I was working with my mentor, so I grew up, and Sergeant Brian, I started riding with him at 15. So I was actually training with him as a trainee. And we had a same thing, a deer shot in the field, and a guy reported it. He gave us a lousy description, but we went to some apartment houses that were in the area. And by chance, it was a Ford, and it had a couple of the numbers, but he had reported a Dodge with a bad plate. But he reaches in. I dropped him off. He walked through the parking lot. He reaches in. He comes back with blood on his hands, fresh blood. And then we hit that apartment
house. That's a clue.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like a needle in a haystack, but just knowing where to go. And I remember hitting it at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the guy answers in his boxer shorts, and he said, "Hey, let me do the talking here." He opened that door, and the first thing he's like, "Where's the deer? Where's the deer?" Yelling at the kid, and he goes, "It's not here," and he raises his hands. But it was, you know, that time frame, 1 o'clock in the morning, answering the door in your boxer shorts, and there's the game warden, and he's firing off, "Where's the deer?" And, you know, honest answer came flying out of his mouth right away. So sometimes
caught him off guard.
Yeah, yeah, and the first 24, no matter if it's a homicide or any kind of case, and I always say, you know, deer and moose killed, it's like a homicide. We treat it as a homicide. We investigate it like a homicide. We collect evidence, forensics evidence, just like they do on CSI, and we carry that whole case to, you know, right through. So I think we have such a unique job that has so many facets, and it's so interesting. But hitting those guys at 1 o'clock in the morning, it takes them off their feet when they see the game warden there. And we know that they know we mean business. Yep. I love that story. We get a quarter of a million in cocaine on the way to do a deer investigation, and then you put the cherry on top with 5 deer. Oh my goodness, that's a great rookie story.
My 25 years, that one story. I mean, if anybody asks me, will tell me, it always comes to mind because there was just so much involved. And it was 2 really good cases and completely opposite ends of the law enforcement spectrum, drugs on one end and dead deer on the other. But it was a lot of fun, and I took a lot of pride in those arrests.
Yeah, and I think the youth helps too, because you're out there, you're just starting, and those cases mean so much to you when you break the ice on such major cases. I mean, 5 deer alone would have been an enormous case for a game warden, and I've never to mention the drugs on the way. Oh,
yeah. And, looking at my career, it's not surprising to me that it took place at night, because I was a night owl. I used to love working at night, because I figured out early on that, your worst of the worst violators, they like to do their dirty deeds under the cover of darkness. So if you were going to make I could go out and check fishing licenses and write, the little Class C misdemeanor citations all day long. But I rock those big cases, and I found over my career that 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning is when, if you're out there prowling around and you find something going on, it's usually something pretty good.
Yeah, like your grandmother used to say, nothing good happens after midnight.
There's a lot of truth in that.
There's so much is.
Yeah.
I don't know how many taillights after midnight, you know, come into a DWI or an illegal deer or illegal drugs or whatever, because you're right, nothing good happens after midnight. And those are people want to work under cover of darkness. They feel comfortable there, so that's when we should be working as well. And it's hard being a game warden because there's so many things to do in the morning, in the evening. You could work 24 hours a day, 5 days a week, if you could, but there's certainly the activity there. But you're right. I think the important stuff, those deer cases, those big cases, are happening after dark. So, and you just proved it with that case for sure. That's cool. How about funny cases? Anything that you know strikes you as throughout your career as an entertaining story? You must have put one in that book too, because there's nothing better.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Funny game warden.
You need to read the book.
Apparently, we'll leave that at either book. You got one that you didn't put in the book?
Well, I don't have a funny – well, I do, but I will tell you a funny situation. My partner, Chris Freed, the one that I told you he got shot, we talked about him, but he was – I mean, me and him worked together late in my career more than any other game warden. And we had this unique good guy, bad guy. You know, when you're talking about questioning people, I mean, we just knew our roles, and it was so funny to watch us work. But we had a situation 1 month where there was a small city lake in the surrounding area where there were a lot of problems. And so we decided that we were going to start working late at night and get this cleaned up. And anyway, like, I guess three or four contacts in a row, we would go up there and we would witness the violation and we would contact the person. And we started questioning them. Like this one in particular, a guy was trespassing. And we'd gotten a complaint and we went up there and he had a dog with him and I rolled up. We didn't even get out of the truck. I rolled the window down and he came up to the truck and he was laughing. And he was just a calm. He didn't, you know, I guess trespassing didn't even enter his mind. And we had a short conversation with him. And Chris said, hey, what you going to do with that dog? And he goes, what do you mean? What am I going to do with it? And I said, well, you're going to have to put him somewhere where you're in jail. And as soon as I said it, the guy passed out. He literally passed out and fell on the ground. I thought he had a heart attack. And so and then the very next contact, we had a guy with some drugs and we were sitting there talking to him and filling up his pockets and stuff. And I pulled something out of his pocket. Chris said something to the effect, whoa, there's a trip to jail. And the guy passed out, fell out on the ground. So there for a while, we said, we're going to have to calm our questioning techniques down because we're putting these people to sleep and they're just passing out on them. But that was pretty funny to see somebody, you know, face plant over something we said.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that goes back to what you were saying is about how unexpected it is in the middle of the night when you don't think anybody's around and suddenly out of the darkness, a game warden walks up and starts asking questions. That'll put the fear of God in some people.
Yeah.
And cause them to pass out.
No doubt for sure. So you had some criminal cases, any high profile cases? You know, I think some of us get involved with murder cases and.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I can't tell you what year it was. It was probably 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. I was out working. It was during deer season. I was working, and dispatch called me and said that they had a reported hunting accident and someone had been shot. And so it was on. It's like it's always. It's on the other end of the county. So it took me, you know, quite a while to get there. But when I got there, there sure was. There was a gentleman, and he was deceased. He'd been shot in the chest with a high-powered rifle. So we started, you know, it was kind of chaos because there were a lot of local folks that showed up before we did. Mm-hmm. So we kind of got control of the scene, started trying to gather witnesses. And I'd ask, you know, who reported this? And they said the gentleman's uncle had called it in. I said, well, where is he at? And they said, we don't know. He left. And what do you mean he left? And so right off the bat, something didn't add up. But anyway, as it turned out, it wasn't an accident. And later on, it ended up with me, the sheriff of the county, and a Texas Ranger serving a search warrant on a home. And we found the weapon that killed this gentleman hidden in a barn. So that was a pretty serious situation. It turned out reported as a hunting accident, which it was anything but an accident. And ended up a family member got charged in relation to that gentleman's death. So that was pretty high profile. And, you know, I always remember that case.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think a lot of we start taking a serious look at hunting related shootings because it could be a homicide. So we got to rule that out. you know, make all those connections.
That's what I always told people anytime I would go up to any kind of a death that was unattended. People just show up because they think they know what's going on. I said, don't do that.
Right.
Make sure you know what, cross all your T's, dot your I's, and check everything out before you just assume something happened, because I've been fooled before. And it's not a good feeling when you you're leaning one way thinking you know something, then you find it's pointed out to you later that how wrong you were. So you really have to do a thorough investigation, whatever it is.
Right. And if it does change, if you've done a thorough investigation, you can go back to it. You've got all the evidence that was there to collect it, all the photos, all the video, you know, whatever you need. So if it takes another trail, that you can go back and actually look at it and see if the evidence fits that, which, yeah, I learned that early on too, is to get as much evidence as you can, because once it's gone, it's gone. So,
yeah, and you can't have too much evidence.
No. I mean,
if you need it, you got it. If you don't need it, well, you had it anyway.
Yeah, and I think you saw it too. The having these phones that actually take pictures and take video electronically have been such a game changer for us, because I was back when we actually used film, and the department never wanted to, you know, get it developed because that costs money. So I would take all these pictures, and then I'd have to fight with getting them developed. And so with electronic images, we first had the digital cameras that I could only take what I needed and save the rest on a file electronically somewhere else. And then even better, we got these phones we can videotape with. We can take audio recordings. So if we're doing an interview, you can throw your phone in the center. It's recording these. It was just a game changer. That was such a game changer in my tenure, and I'm sure you saw that too.
Yeah, Wayne, you sound just like me. Early on in my career, I was taking those pictures and going down, getting them developed and trying to get my money back. And I decided I just paid for it out of my pocket. You know, I paid for a lot of film development. But then, yeah, when we got those phones, but I will tell you, the phones were game changers, but it was good and it was bad.
Yes.
Because when you're out chasing night hunters around and you got two of them in the car and two of them out in the field, and they all got cell phones and they're talking back and forth. Back in the old days before cell phones, you could go talk to a witness and then get some information and go to someone's home. You know, well, now you talk to this witness on the way to the home, they've already called him, say, hey, he's coming and here's what's on his mind. So, yeah, they're good, but they're bad in some ways too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even, you know, throwing a decoy out there and running a decoy, guys, you know, that was that message. Once you got one guy that saw it or made it or shot it, he would text all his buddies that where you were at and everything. And you had basically one bite at the apple, where you used to be able to leave it all day long and never had an issue. You'd have new people all the time, but it would be, you know, everybody in that area would already know where you were set up, and you'd have to go to the next county or something.
Got a quick story about that. One time, me and a game warden, we had a lot of complaints below Cooper Lake Dam, the tail race area where they were letting water out of the dam. Well, there were a lot of people going back there and using nets, and they were taking, you know, hundreds of pounds of fish, and they were doing it late at night, and we knew it. And so one night, me and this game warden got on the back of the dam. It's really steep. They hadn't mowed a little bit, so we had a little bit of weeds to we were laying in waiting for them. And here comes a minivan down the road, and they get out, and it was just like an assembly line. Everybody knew what they were doing. One guy had two buckets and two other guys had nets, and this girl came walking up the back of the dam, and she had a cell phone, but she walked right up within 20 feet of us and just stood there and never saw us. But she was the lookout, you know, in case the game warden started coming, she was to call them on the cell phones. Well, they got down there, and they would, like I said, it was a pretty organized deal. They would throw the net, take the fish, put them in the buckets, whistle at her. She would go down and get the bucket, take it to the top of the dam and set it next to the guardrail. And then she'd go back to her post. And they just kept doing this until there were 8 or 10 buckets up there by the guardrail, because there was a road up on the top of the dam. And what they were going to do is leave with no evidence, but then go around and get on the highway and come back and then stop, get their buckets put in the trunk and go. Problem was, there was two game wardens laying in the weeds watching all this. So when they got through, they had all their buckets staged. They all went and got in the van and took off down the lower road. But when they did, we went and got their buckets and moved them about 30 yards down. And so we waited. You asked about a funny story. This is funny, because they came up and they stopped and they got out and opened the trunk or opened the side door, and they all got out and the buckets were gone. And so they started yelling at the girl, and she said, "No, they're right here. They're right here." They were yelling at her, yelling at her. We let them give her a pretty good chewing before we come out and said, "Oh, boys, we know where your buckets are." And they were full of crappie and bass and, you know, a lot of game fish. But, yeah, she had her cell phone, and had we not been there, if we'd have showed up coming down the road,
right,
you know, they had to throw all the fish back in the water, and we'd have never made a case.
Yeah, you know, watching people and getting all that evidence prior to is priceless. And that's probably half the reason I named, you know, this podcast Warden's Watch, because we do so much watching before we get it. You know, you get all that evidence, you take all that in. I think I've said this on the podcast, my former sergeant, Mike Moody, the only thing he wanted when he retired was his binoculars. And I was like, they're beat up, they're old. Why do you want it? And it's kind of like the title of your book. You know, he's like, you know what I've seen through these binoculars, Wayne? You know what these binoculars have seen? That's why I want them.
Wayne, I can't even believe you said that. This brings up another story that just happened. So if you've watched Lone Star Law, there's one show where they show me looking through some binoculars. It's a monocular because the other half had fallen off. And so it's only half a binocular, and I'm using that. And everybody's asking me, well, why don't – and I said, because these been with me since day one. And, you know, I'm not going to give up on them. They stuck with me. I'm sticking with them. And so I used those. Well, I was a victim of COVID last summer when I retired. They had a big retirement party for me and all, but it got canceled. So we just had it this past weekend. And anyway, my captain, Steve Stapleton, he got up and roasted me a little bit, as you can imagine.
I can imagine.
Well, I had a gift for him. And I said, well, here, and I gave him his gift. And it was wrapped in a pink box with a pink bow. And he opened it up, and it was that half of his binoculars. I said, those are yours now.
Oh.
Anyway, he ran home. He took a picture later that night. He had them up on his mantle with all his other little keepsakes. So, I gave up my half a pair of binoculars to him.
Yeah. No, it's so true, and it defines us, I think, as wardens, because those are the good cases that we made, the ones we watched, and then we moved in, then we apprehended. We saw the play, we saw where she left the fish, and we yeah. apprehended because we were watching. So important, you know. Like I said, Warden's Watch. That's why I labeled it that, because that's what we do. That's what the good cases are. And you just like Sergeant Mike Moody, you just labeled it again. That seen a lot of things through those binoculars. You did it with your book. Yeah, we see a lot through our careers, and it's so unique. When I look at other law enforcement officers and what they do, and I can't even put myself in their shoes, because we change so much. And you don't have as many seasons, but you have the diversity that we do. When you guys do search and rescue, you jump in on that, and we're the kind of the police in the woods. And it changes mm-hmm. so much from fishing to hunting to search and rescue missions to, and you guys have a lot of other things down there, being so close to the border. I'm sure you've had a lot of interactions exactly. with, you know, those types of things. If you want to share those, that would yeah. be pretty awesome, because that's
well, I made several, probably maybe more than anyone in the state when I was working. I was sent to the border to do border operations. So yeah, that's a mess down there, and we could talk all day long about that. But that's a mess. But you said something about Texas game wardens, and that's one thing that's unique about Texas. We're so big, and when you get out to the western part of the state, I was stationed out there for a few years, and I actually had two counties that were 36,000 miles. And a lot of those wardens out in West Texas, whenever the sun goes down, they are the law enforcement for the county, period. Because there may not be but two deputies, you know, working in that whole county, and, you know, they get off at 5 or whatever. And until the sun comes back up, the only law enforcement out there in that county is the Texas game warden. Mm. And so they answer family violence calls. They go to accidents, burglaries, shoplifting, whatever happens during the night, they call the Texas game warden because they're the only ones available. And so that's one unique thing about Texas. It's just we're so big and so spread out. And out there in the west part of the state, a game warden has a lot more responsibility, because he's just got so much that, you know, he's the only one that is available if something comes up.
Mm. And that's part of their responsibilities when there's nobody else to respond to the criminal stuff as well.
Yeah, because they tell you, and we're trained that way, especially out there that, well, anywhere in the state, but it more so out there, that is you're on duty 24/7, 365. Mm. Now, I mean, you have hours and paperwork that you have to turn in, but you're expected that if something comes up that requires attention, regardless of what day it is, regardless of what time it is, you're expected to answer that call. And like you said, it may have nothing to do with hunting and fishing in the environment. It may be, you know, a fight at a bar where someone's been stabbed. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you're the only one available and they call and you're called to assist, you're expected to go.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's a little bit different, but you're right. When we're the only ones, we respond as well. But hopefully there's a trooper coming behind us so we can hand it all off, because we'd rather not do the criminal side. We've got plenty to do on our own side. There has been plenty of cases that we've taken the criminal stuff, especially with the drugs on the bottom end of it. But yeah, so that is very unique. And I'm sure, you know, nationwide, there's probably other agencies that certainly do that. Certainly if the closer, you know, when you hear something, I know we just had two wardens respond, not knowing it was a homicide, but it was a homicide where they decapitated the victim. So yeah,
wow,
yeah, and they were the first ones there, and it was just an illegal camping call, and that's what the types of things that you know, as you know, you can have one call and it turns to the other, and
absolutely. Yeah,
in that case is it's going to get adjudicated hopefully within the year and stuff, and then hopefully we'll do an interview about that, because that was a pretty sketchy call when it all came together and you figured things out.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah. But, you know, we are when it comes off on the pavement, generally, we're the law enforcement. And especially when the locals know that we operate good in the woods, they're always reaching out to us. Hey, they went in the woods. Call the game warden.
Yeah. And I'll also, you know, as far as, and I'm sure y'all the same way, we have a lot of equipment that other agencies may not have.
Right.
If, you know, a trooper responds to a wreck where, you know, a car went off a bridge into the water. Well, troopers don't have boats, but game wardens do. So we would get the call to come, you know, use our dive team if there's a drowning or whatever, our boats to get out to this vehicle and help remove it. If it's something where it's really muddy, we have four-wheel drive trucks and you know, four-wheelers and ATVs and those types of equipment that maybe these other agencies don't have. So they'll call on us to assist them in whatever they need.
Did you have a lot of water in your area? Because when I think of Texas, I just think of tumbleweeds and desert and, you know, Rio Grande.
It's like I said,
about it.
Texas is a huge, huge state. We got oceans, we got mountains, we got deserts, we got forests and everything in between. But the area of the state that I work mostly in has more water than any part of the state, actually. Nice. There are, I don't know, five major lakes within 30 miles of my house, and there's two more being built right now. So
they're building lakes.
They just, one's filling up right now. They just closed the dam and it's about 3/4 full, and they just broke ground and doing the dozer work on another one. They just broke ground a couple of weeks ago. So we've got water everywhere.
Wow. That's cool that Texas is building lakes. That's really cool. And then they sell lots adjacent to it, and then you got waterfront, right?
That's a sticky issue there. Some people like the lakes, some people don't like the lakes. I mean, if you had to give up your family farm in order to build a lake to send water to Dallas, you're not real happy, and I understand that.
Gotcha.
There's half of the people that are in, you know, behind the lakes, and half of them like, no, I'd rather have my farmland.
Yeah, so totally understand
it.
The changing world we live in, you know, certainly water.
Yeah, the population of Texas is just exploding. I mean, people moving here from California and other states for whatever reason. And Dallas, it's just, I mean, well, all the cities are just exploding in population. Traffic's terrible. But that's the negative part of it.
Yeah, and that overflows to
Texas
outdoor
is
recreation.
A good place, but we got our problems. What's that?
And that overflows to outdoor recreation, because a lot of those people coming in, and now they fish, they hunt, they boat, they do all those things.
Yeah.
Your
true
job
story.
Is busier.
My last year of checking dove hunters in early September, just over a year and a half ago, those same fields that I was checking dove hunters in, if you go out there right now, it's houses as far as you can see. No more farmland. They've been... they were paved over with streets and roads and concrete pads and houses sitting on them just as far as the eye can see. No more dove hunting for that area. And that's going on a lot right here in my part of Texas.
Mm. Yeah. Dove hunting is a big thing in Texas, isn't it?
Yeah. In parts of the state it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be almost like,
When I was a kid, you know, traditionally it's always opened on September the 1st, and You know, I don't even know why we had school on September the 1st, because half of the male population of the school, you know, we're going to take at least half the day off to go dove hunting that opening day if it landed on a weekday.
Yeah, so it's almost like the opening day of deer season in Pennsylvania, where they actually schools close, or they used to. I think they just moved the opening day.
I remember
Saturday.
Growing up, I was, but September 1st was always a big day for me, because it was like the opening day of dove season, and then all the other seasons just started opening one after another. So it was kind of like the traditional opening of hunting season, period, let alone dove. If it was a weekday and I had school, well, I just gonna have to mark me tardy or absent, because I was going to get my birds.
That's awesome. And you guys have a lot of exotics. I mean, when I was down there, you could see all these farms and everything that had exotics, and it's very different, you know, than the East. You have to have a place to hunt, correct? I mean, you just can't go out on private property and hunt down in Texas, or can you?
Well, you can, as long as no one cares, but the problem is everyone cares now.
Yes.
And so, that's the biggest, and people ask me, well, what's the biggest issue, problem? And we've got some, but mine is a lack of place to hunt that you can afford.
Right.
Because everybody wants to charge money now, and the more people creates more competition. Mm-hmm. And the more competition, and you throw money in there, it's just hard to find a place that you can afford in Texas. And we've got some, a lot of public hunting land that's pretty good hunting. But here again, crowding gets to be a problem at times. So just the lack of an availability of a quality place to hunt is getting to be a problem. And you can, like I said, as far as the law goes, you need to get at least verbal permission. You don't have to have written permission on your body, but if a game warden shows up and says, hey, do you have permission, and he wants to follow up on it, you need to at least be able to give him a name and a phone number so he can call and verify that you've got permission. Mm-hmm. And being caught without permission, depending on what you're doing or what you've killed, can be a felony. If you take a white-tailed deer without landing on a permission, it's a state jail felony. So pretty serious charge.
Yeah, I'd say so. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, by all means.
Yeah, that opened my
permission.
Eyes.
Yeah. And today, nowadays, with a lot of, late in my career, I started getting a lot of calls because of the game cameras. Mm. You know, everybody starts using game cameras now. Well, they catch a lot of things besides the deer and the ducks and whatever. They catch poachers too.
Right.
And so I'll go up there and he said, hey, I want to press charge on this guy. He's hunting on my place. And I look at him, you recognize this guy? He goes, yeah, it's my neighbor. And he got caught on a game camera. And so best to have permission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the Northeast, we have a lot of open land still, so it's pretty different, especially when I was going out west and learning all the different laws and regulations. And Texas always strikes me as I'm driving down and I can see a giraffe's head in the distance, or a zebra and stuff. And I'm like, you know, there's no place else in the country I don't think you can do that, Benny. I mean, really.
And that's mostly, it's not, I mean, we have it here locally. There's a couple of places, a few places, but mainly that's going to be in the hill country and in South Texas.
And that's where I was, the hill country. So
if you'll notice also, there's a lot of high fences everywhere.
Yes.
And that's to enclose those exotic animals.
Definitely interesting, but that's certainly where I was in that hill country. It's kind of funny what you call hill country too, compared to what I'm used to is hills.
Yeah.
But
I know what you mean.
Everything is relative.
People have been really surprised though. They say, well, I was surprised the first time I ever saw them, but Texas does have a mountain there. Way out in far west Texas, we've got some really impressive mountains. Nice. But you got to go 800 miles to see them. They are way, way, way out west. But we do have some mountains that would compete with any other mountains.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying about the hill country. They're small hills.
Yeah, rolling hills.
Compared to what you're used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But compared to the middle part of the country, I'm sure they're hills.
But you in Texas, you drive, you know, 3 or 4 hours, you're going to be in a completely different environment. We've got what we call the Pine Curtain. And if you leave the hill country and you drive 3 hours east, at some point around east of Interstate 35, you're going to cross through the Pine Curtain. And then I don't even like it down there because I get claustrophobic. There's just pine trees and I can't see. And I like to be able to see the hills and the valleys and what's around the next curve. And there it's just pine trees everywhere.
Huh.
So, yeah, that's Yeah.
That's neat.
No, so we do. We literally have forest, prairies, mountains, seaside. I mean, the oceans, we've got it all. Mm.
Yeah, no, that's pretty awesome. And it's so big, you would think it would be worse. So, no, real interesting conversation, Benny. Can you talk about your children's book, or are you going to wait until you release it?
Oh, yeah, I can talk about it a little bit. It's short. It's only four stories.
Yeah.
That I came up with, and the stories are fictional accounts of why the earth is what it is.
Uh-huh.
One story talks about how all the different birds and animals got their colors, and the flowers and the trees, why they're different colors. That's all I'm going to say about that. You'll have to read the book to figure out how it all happened. My favorite story of the book is a story called A Catfish Like Me, and it's kind of got a moral to it about someone who boasts a lot, what might happen to you if you're too boastful. But here again, you're just going to have to read the book. The book is titled Furry Tales.
I love it.
And like I said, it's four stories, and it's kind of geared towards your first grade, second grade, third, fourth, maybe fifth, that age group.
Cool. And I pick it up from there with a cowboy in the woods from fourth to about 10, I would think. But yeah,
I was kind of doing some research, trying to look at your book and some of your other podcasts, trying to read about it. Yeah, so I might have to get that and look at that.
Yeah, maybe we can trade books. That would be good.
There you go.
That'd be a good idea. I put the books behind me. I have John Norris's back there with a big old marijuana leaf on it, and I don't know how many questions. I teach college, too. So during Zoom, I'm like, any questions in the end? And one kid says, yeah, Lieutenant, why do you have a book with a marijuana leaf on your on your backdrop? And I'm like, well, that's because that's John Norris's book, my partner. So I'm about the hidden war.
Yeah, I'm looking at your background there, and I didn't do it, and I don't know what. Well, I think I may have some of the other words took. I wish I'd have taken pictures of my office before I cleaned it out and gave it to someone else, because it was literally a museum. It had 25 years worth of game warden memorabilia, so you can imagine what it might have looked like. And yeah, I had some interesting photos and some gadgets too that I picked up along the way. But
it's funny because that is my office behind me. That's when I took it down. That's pretty much what I brought and made my backdrop and stuff. But again, looking at your backdrop, Benny, I mean, you got the moose antler, the hearth, state of Texas there. What's inside that state of Texas? Is that because it looks like it's framed up for other things?
Those are arrowheads.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, some of which I found and some of which I made myself. I started collecting those when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I was just fascinated with them. And I don't know, I've probably 50,000. I have buckets of them, but I've been hunting since I was a little kid. But I was so fascinated with them, and I started trying at an early age, and I got to where I was pretty, I can make them pretty good too, rival any that you'd find. So I make some, but I find most of them, and I still enjoy getting out and looking in the creeks and finding those.
Oh, yeah.
That moose antler, there's an interesting story about that moose antler. I've had it since 1980. I was flying in a helicopter in the state of Wyoming in a summer job. And, that was the first time I'd ever been to the Rocky Mountains. And I was like a kid in a candy shop. And I was looking out that helicopter, and I saw that moose antler on the side of a mountain. And I immediately knew what it was. And I insisted. I started pecking the pilot. I said, go back, go back. He's like, ah. I said, go back, go back. And he could see I was really. So he turns around. He flies me back. He lowers the helicopter down. It lets me out. I grab my antler, put it in the chopper, and off we go. And I've had it ever since. So
that's awesome.
Yep. I've had it a long time.
That's an awesome story about that moose antler. It means something. Man, I can't believe you got him to turn around and let you out to get a moose antler.
Well, we worked on a pretty... I worked on a seismograph crew, and we flew around in helicopters to get from mountaintop to mountaintop or whatever. And that particular pilot, he was a character. So he was on board with a lot of things, but I was 18 at the time. And I guess he could saw the excitement in my eyes wanting that moose antler. So he made it possible.
That's incredible, and to bring that all the way through. So yeah, and I've got several things from my adventures across the country that I collected, and some similar things. A mule deer from out west that when I was working out in Washington State and collected that along the way. But so certainly, as we do that, they're priceless stories, and And hopefully you can come out with another book with another 28 stories so we can continue, because there's nothing like a game warden story. And that's why I love doing this podcast, love sharing it, love telling people what we do, and hopefully inspiring the next generation. And I really appreciate you, Benny, doing it. It sounds like we're cut from the same cloth, so to speak, as I think we all are when we're game wardens.
Yeah, you get a bunch of game wardens together, you find out how, you know, it's like a brotherhood, and they all have the same thought processes and interests most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. Anything in closing? Because this is much your podcast, this is my podcast. So,
well, I've enjoyed it. I appreciate the invitation to come on and talk to you. And I can put one more plug for my book.
Absolutely.
Tales of a Texas Game Warden. And it said, What My Eyes Have Seen. We talked about that. But you can get it through Amazon or Barnes and Noble's, any of the big book outlets. But I hope everybody gets it, and I hope they enjoy it. I'm already thinking about maybe following it up with a companion book.
No, that's great, and I really appreciate you doing that, because it helps the next generations and preserves our stories too, because I think that each one of them is precious, especially to us.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Benny, for joining us. Appreciate your time on Lone Star Law, because that certainly gives a lot of connection to a lot of my listeners. I will say that I call it the backstage of Northwoods Law, and this is the backstage of Lone Star Law, so to speak. Yeah. And just everybody, certainly I think the podcast has been a success because of a lot of those people that actually visually saw them, and now they want a little bit more. They want to learn about game wardens across the United States and understand us more, hear those stories, and support us too. That's a big part of if you can't be a game warden, you want to support the game wardens.
Exactly. Cool. Well, Wayne, thank you very much. I do appreciate you. God bless. And tell everybody up there I said hello.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other game wardens on our adventures protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experience of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders,